Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor. My tractor sexy.
Goodbye, city life.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Woohoo!
Yes, it is our monthly catch-up with Ryan Jenkins, the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. Ryan, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. I was thinking about you on Saturday as we're biking around, and I'm seeing all the dirt get tilled up and the fields getting prepared for the planting season, and I could identify it. It was a spreader. I knew what I was looking at.
You're making progress.
I'm coming along. I'm coming along. Hey, I did see something. I'm just kind of curious about this, and maybe it doesn't have an answer. I don't know, but I noticed it on Saturday when we were biking. We're in Shamukla right now, and there were three different fields, and very noticeably, not exactly in the middle of the field, but somewhere in the, like, it's trees all around, and the field is completely clear, and there will be a tree or a copse of trees or something, and they don't necessarily look like they're, you know, heritage trees or anything like that, but there's just something right in the middle of the field, and I'm thinking, well, that is right in the way. Why would they have left that in the planting field? Can you explain something like that?
There are all kind of reasons. It could be something of sentimental value to them. It could have been where old home place was in the middle of the field. You know, somebody's house used to be there years ago.
Huh.
But probably, you know, without seeing exactly what you were seeing, more times than not, those are like wet weather ponds, areas like that where you can't get in there and farm anyway, or can't get in there to clear it out because it's wet a lot of the time. So that's more than likely that's what you were seeing.
Okay, I think it was smaller than that. I'm imagining those would be a little bit larger, like a wetlands kind of area. So I don't know. It just caught me by surprise, and I didn't have an answer. And I thought, you know, well, if anybody would know, you would be the guy to know. I think it was last Wednesday in Jay, there was a meeting of the Florida cotton growers. You know, of course, you're in that category. Anything happened at that meeting that we ought to know about?
Yeah, that's Oregon State Growers Association that we're trying to get started. You know, we have them for peanuts and for other commodities, but and all of our neighboring states have a cotton growers association, but Florida does not. And believe it or not, we do grow a significant amount of cotton in the northern part of the state. So
I do believe it.
Farmers are trying to get that started, basically, so it gives us representation more so on the national level when we're dealing with different issues. So it gets us a seat at the table on some of the national grower organizations.
Okay, so this is something that you and some of the other cotton growers are kind of trying to develop in order to have a little bit more lobbying capability in Washington, D.C. Okay, that makes sense to me.
Correct, yes. You said that so well.
Hey, just because this is how my brain works, since we're talking about cotton, I know when I came out to watch you harvest cotton and driving the harvester with you for a minute, one of the things that was surprising to me is the cotton stalks, like after you have taken the cotton off and you get about 90% of it off with the picker, the stalks that are left are very robust. I mean, they're like tree saplings. You couldn't just go easily remove them yourself. And you go through there with machinery and plow them under and churn them up and whatever. But what did they do before they had the machinery? Because that is a really labor-intensive thing. Did they just do that by hand?
A lot of times, years ago, they'd turn cows in on them, and cows would graze and stomp them, trample them down throughout the winter.
Oh, okay.
But more times than not, they would let the cold make them brittle, you know, let them rot as much as they could during the winter, and in the spring, the stalks would be real brittle, and they could easier work them up. Then they could till the land and start destroying those stalks. But, you know, we've talked about the boll weevil before, and, you know, that almost shut down the cotton industry in our area in the South years ago. So they've done away with the boll weevil now, but one of the things that we have to do is destroy those stalks in a timely manner, because if there were boll weevils around, it gives them a place to harbor over winter. So we're mandated that we have to destroy our stalks as soon as possible so that the boll weevil, if there were to be a rare one around somewhere, you know, couldn't produce and stay living throughout the winter months.
Okay, so in the past, when we didn't have the machinery, they could afford to let it kind of get brittle and die off in the winter and then take care of it when, you know, it was more appropriate. But because that's where the boll weevil lives, which threatened the crops, now you have to take them out before, but you have the machinery to do that as well. See, this is why I love talking to you, because I learned stuff that I would have never thought of before. By the way, you and I have talked about that, you know, we had that heat wave, kind of late heat, and then I was asking whether that would affect things, but then we also had the cold snap too, right?
That's right. Remember I told you the early hot snap that we had, hot spell that we were having, that couple of weeks of almost 90-degree weather that we had. I said it's going to trick people into planting their gardens and things like that, thinking that the winter is over. And then almost immediately after we had that conversation, you know, it got it was 28 degrees here at the barn for a couple of nights. So that ruined some people's gardens that got out there and were Johnny on the spot, decided to plant their garden a little bit early. That ruined those, and as well as we had some corn that got damaged to a certain degree that was already up. So and, you never know, but I think we're getting safer and safer now. You know, it's about to where we can really get going here in the next couple of weeks and not really worry about the cold weather anymore.
Now, southern half of the counties, which is, of course, a lot of the population, I hadn't seen a lot of bad storms in the last week or two, but there have been some pretty bad storms through Alabama and stretched some of it into, you know, the northern portion of the panhandle. Did any of that affect you guys?
No, we've been very fortunate so far. I looked on the radar right before we went on air this morning, and there's a lot of bad weather just north of us now, but I believe it's going to stay to the north of us. So maybe we'll dodge another bullet, but I do feel for our friends, you know, throughout the South where the tornadoes have been and such that had their operations damaged or just totally done away with in some places that I've seen. So, you know, that's really there's never a good time to get hit by a tornado, but, you know, right here at planting time and for all your machinery and stuff to get destroyed in your barns and things like that, you know, those guys are in a bad way. So I really feel for them, and we've been fortunate to dodge those bullets so far.
Brian, you and I, we talked, I think it was maybe last time, about how the, you know, the early heat, one of the problems that would create is that because we didn't have a very harsh winter, at least not most later on, is pests, that they would have more ability to multiply and that could create a problem for you. Did the cold snap kind of counteract that some, or did it come too late, too little?
No, that wasn't cold enough and long enough. We need more cold weather and colder weather.
Okay.
To help with those issues. And no, that really wasn't anything that was helpful.
What are you doing these days? And it's, you know, it's April, just barely. You getting out and you starting to prepare the soil? What's going on right now?
We are. We're almost finished planting our corn. That's the first crop that we plant every year in about probably, you know, around the 15th or 20th of this month, we'll start really watching the weather and looking at the soil temperatures and stuff and making sure we're good to go. And if everything's, if we check those boxes, then we should start planting our peanuts here in just, another 2 or 3 weeks. And then immediately, not necessarily following that, but basically after we get good and started with peanuts, we'll go ahead and start planting our cotton. So I hope by the time you talk to me next month that we have a significant amount of our peanuts and cotton planted and that our corn's up and growing and everything's off to the races. So now we're just getting everything prepared for that. We finished spreading our lime that we've talked about the last couple of times. We're done with that project. Now we're spreading our phosphorus and potassium on the fields, as it's called for, and terminating our cover crops, and we'll begin strip tilling this week. You know, just tilling the actual row, the space that we actually need tilled for the plants to grow. We'll begin that process this week. And, you know, we're getting to our busy time now. It's fixing to be come early, stay late from now till about the middle of June or so, probably.
And yeah, no, and it's kind of interesting. I know in the past you have always told me that, like, you love that smell of the dirt. And when I've seen you pull up peanuts, you love that smell of hearing. And it's funny because when we were biking over the weekend, and I'm biking, I sent you a picture of it. They were starting to, you know, some of the dirt had been tilled up in some of the fields, and I'm like, smells like money. Even though it doesn't to me, but I'm starting to feel about the land the way you feel about it because I see it through your eyes a little bit. You always got a kind of a farm fact for us or something, Ryan?
We do. So last month was National Peanut Month, where we bring awareness to the peanut industry. So I've got one little fact here. The United States of America has about 7,000 peanut farmers, and we grow about 3% of the peanuts in the world, but we produce about 10% of the peanuts in the world due to our high yields.
What?
That's right.
I don't understand. Like you mean of the peanut plants, basically? You're only 3%, but you're 10% of the...
We grow about 3% of the acres. We plant about 3% of the acres.
Got it.
That are
okay,
planted
all right.
Peanuts, but we produce about 10% of the actual peanuts due to our high yields.
I'm still stuck on the 7,000 only. Like, only 7,000 farmers in the U.S. are the peanut source. Like, that's not many people. Wow, that's a lot.
Right, as opposed to, like, corn growers. I looked it up and now forgot. I didn't write down the statistic, but I want to say it was around 350,000 corn growers in the country. And there's 7,000. I mean, it's a small, the peanut industry is a relatively small and tight industry.
Yeah. Wow. I just never thought it was that, you know, sort of isolated, basically. All right. Well, Ryan Jenkins, he is our farmer in Jay, Florida, the owner of Jenkins Farms. And Ryan, as always, thank you for the time, the information. Thanks for keeping farming alive. Thanks for putting food on my kids' plates and putting clothes on their backs, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us. It means a lot to us. I hope y'all have a great week.